Anything else you need to get off your chest?
Just that. I hope it's recording.
It is.
Because helium up the blimp, Joe. The Raiders are moving to Vegas.
Oh, that's right. I saw you tweet out that picture the other day of Papa Shango, Dusty's Gorilla, and Skunk Boy.
Right. And I'm glad you got the joke, because the best part of that ESPN thing, like, they're literally interviewing, like, the crazy fans.
Right.
And it's like the president was shot. Do you know what I mean? And I understand. They live in Oakland. The team is leaving, and you're sad. But, like you said, it's Skunk Boy, Papa Shango, and a guy in a gorilla suit. And the dire tone that is just coming off them, I feel terrible for them, but I couldn't stop laughing. Do you know what I mean?
Because, if there was ever a day to drop the gimmick, this would be the day.
Right. And they had more of them that weren't there. And literally, like, the tweet that I put out and the Facebook I put out was, like, a somber tone. And people were like, oh, I feel for you. Your team is leaving its town. And I'm like, you people don't get what I'm doing here at all. At all. Like, I get it, but I'm happy they're going to Vegas. That's the one town, because now I might actually see a game, because, geez, what will it cost me? Like, $69 to fly to Vegas and get a room at the Bellagio for, like, $39 for one night and just not even change my clothes and come home. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll do that. But to go to Oakland, it would be, like crazier. So I'm fine with it, and I just found it amusing that people didn't get the little joke that I put out.
Of course. But, and then I see on the little scroll that it says owners approve move with a vote of 31-1. First of all, who knew a football team had 32 owners?
No,
doesn't
it's
an owner mean like singularity, like one person would own something? Like, why are there multiple owners of one thing?
No, because there are 32 teams in the NFL.
Oh, so, like, all the teams, like, all the other teams get to vote if they move? That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, that's what it was. It's all 32. And you get to vote on your own team if you want to go.
Was
so
that
vote
one
against
vote
yourself.
Them?
No.
Like, I want to know who the one vote said, no, stay in Oakland.
Miami Dolphins owner.
Oh, for real?
Yep.
This is common knowledge.
Yeah, he came out. I guess they came out and said, I don't know if the votes are public or he came out and said it, but it was like, yep, the one vote against it was the owner for the Miami Dolphins. And some teams have multiple owners. Like, you can own 60% of the team and that you have a controlling factor. But even if you have multiple or a corporation, or Green Bay is owned by the people in Green Bay, like the town. Well, everybody gets a say. I don't know how that works exactly, but for each team, you get one vote. Like, you have to come to a consensus and turn in your vote. Some teams are owned by just one person.
This all sounds very confusing.
It's all a work, brother.
So what are these fans' real names again? You had said it the other day, but
One was Voodoo.
Right.
Obviously, that's the Papa Shango. One is just the gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one with the hat, with the, like, silver and black half on his face and the big wig is Afro. And apparently Darth Raider was unavailable for comment.
Now, I'm aware of Darth Raider, at least.
Mm-hmm. Because he's a guy who dresses like Darth Vader.
Right.
But he has a Raider symbol on him somewhere, so hence the change Vader to Raider. I don't know if you got that. I would just
geniuses.
Geniuses. Well, Raider fans are a brain trust, actually.
Well, you know, and again, I think this has maybe come up before, that Carolla a lot of times will get on the show, the podcast, and will get on a jag and say, if you want to find all the real, like, if you want to trap all the real criminals in LA, advertise free cockfight at Oakland Raiders Stadium and just watch them pour in.
That's right. And just hand out the warrants and the handcuffs. So there you go. We're going. We're gassing up Big Blimpin', our Long Box Heroes blimp, and me and you are going to a game. in 2020.
Oh, that's when the move is?
Yeah, because the best part is they have to play 2 years in Oakland. Yes, because they have no. They're staying for 2 years because they have no place to play in Las Vegas yet. They have to build the stadium.
So that's right, because there's never been, well, outside of the Las Vegas Outlaws from.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have like small seating like places like for stuff, but they don't want that. They want their own team. So they're going to stay in Oakland for 2, maybe 3 years. I'm not sure on that, like when the stadium will be done, but definitely 1 to 2 years. They said they'll be there, and hopefully they'll bring a championship to the Bay before they leave. They said,
wouldn't it be something if in this real sport that they won their championship the first year in their new building?
Oh, that would be great.
Uh-huh.
But they're already going to be back-to-back winners before they move, so that's good for Vegas.
Right, it's going to be a three. It'll be a three-peat there, right.
That is, yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But anyway.
So, hey, we have actual stuff to talk about here on Long Box Heroes After Dark, episode 123.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is Gallifrey Birds, Roman numeral 3.
Right.
We are discussing at length the World Championship Wrestling pay-per-view, Wrestle War 1992, and I am speaking about the Doctor Who quadrilogy.
Yes, four-parter
of Terror of the Autons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to start this off here.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot going on in this episode, Todd.
It's a classic episode.
Okay. So, first of all, right off the bat, this whole production reeks of the 70s.
Do you know when it was shot?
1971, I would assume.
There, yes. Right. Around there, yes.
But after seeing the previous two, that kind of felt like, you know, older productions, right? And there's kind of like a delineation for me of things like from the 70s are old, but they don't feel old to me. Like, I was born in 77, this is from 71, I'll watch something that was filmed in the 70s or 80s, and it just doesn't feel old to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly, like, this was so 70s, like, you could probably pinpoint the exact week that it was shot. Like, that's how 70s it was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the broad strokes of this is another Time Master named the Master shows up, and his power, or one of his powers, is that he has control over plastic.
Not really, but yeah, kind of. He has through the help of those aliens, they control plastic.
Well, okay, now you're saying, okay, the aliens that he's trying to bring to Earth.
Right, the Nestine.
But there's a bunch of times during the show where he is doing things. Like, he has that, like, weird whistle thing. Like, he is physically controlling it.
They're obeying him. That's what's happening.
Okay. So this is his plan, right? That he's going to take over the world because of these aliens' ability to control plastic.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor, however, steals a piece out of his TARDIS, which doesn't allow him to leave. But he also has the assistance of these Autons, which we'll get into as well.
Right.
So, just kind of random thoughts about this. So, who is this Doctor again?
This is the third Doctor, John Pertwee, who is father of, like, did you ever see Dog Soldiers?
I'm aware, yes.
You know, and he's the blah, blah, blah. He's Alfred on Gotham. He was in Dog Soldiers, and I can't think of his first name, but it's obvious his last name is Pertwee. That's his father.
Okay.
Just for comic book fans.
So, the first episode, there's a lot of technical concerns, right? And that's really, mm-hmm. there's your plot of these four episodes, and more stuff will come up. I don't like when the doctors are mean, Mm-hmm. And, like, later in the this run, he talks about how, like, he wants to be childish. But, like, nothing he's doing would relate to me, a layperson, that anything that he's doing is childish. He's working on his projects, he's being mean and snotty to everybody else. And that's not really childish, that's more of being a dick.
Well, he is stuck on Earth
mm-hmm.
because the Time Lords are punishing him for something.
Right, you had mentioned that last week, right.
So he's crotchety because he's stuck on Earth, and at the longer he stays, the more he amicable he becomes. And there is, and if, as if you watch the episode, there is a begrudging respect between the Brigadier and the Doctor. It's just, you know, grating, and like that, they grow as their time together goes on.
All right, so you bring up the Brigadier. I have to ask you a question, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
When is the last time that you've seen these episodes?
20 minutes ago.
Okay. Is the Brigadier wearing a fake mustache?
No, that is a real mustache, because the episodes you were almost going to get was Inferno, which was the last episodes of last season, mm-hmm. where he's on an alternate Earth, and the alternate Earth, like, yeah, you cut back and forth between alternate Earths, and the evil Brigadier has no mustache, so they had to wait till the end of the season and just film all those scenes after he shaved his mustache. Do you know what I mean?
Because there's many scenes in these four episodes, especially, like, the first two, where his mustache looks, like, real fake.
It's not. That is a manly, real mustache for the Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that there's a eventual begrudging respect in this, but like yes. this one, we get to the end and, you know, we find out what the Master's plan is, and the Brigadier's thing is like, we're just going to blow the whole thing up. They're in this trailer on the grounds of where this circus is. So we're just going to like send in an airstrike and blow the whole thing up. Mm-hmm. And like, while he's saying this, like the Doctor just like kind of like puts his hand up to his mouth and leans over to
the new quirky companion, Joe Grant, who posed nude with Daleks later.
The companion.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to her here shortly. So he leans over to her and is like, talk about military intelligence. And I'm just like, what is this? What is this nonsense we're seeing here? So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, the way this is set up is the Doctor, Sherlock Holmes, who's a jerk in the books. Brigadier is his Watson, who he berates, like, in the books, but they still care for each other. And the Master is the opposite of Sherlock, or the Doctor. Like, he's the Doctor's Moriarty from the books. That's basically what this run of Doctor Who was supposed to be, like that, those characters.
Okay, well, they got the tone all wrong. Because the Doctor didn't seem to be figuring out anything.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of, everything kind of sort of fell into his lap. The companion, there were certain scenes where her, and again, she wasn't wearing a wig, obviously, but the lighting made her look like the oldest alleged teenager, I guess.
Okay, even though she wasn't a teenager.
But you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. There were many times where her hair looked like gray because of the way that it was shot. And it made her look older than she was, and she was terrible at attempting to hide. It was just shameful.
Oh my goodness.
Right. I'm looking up her nude pictures now.
She posed with Daleks.
Right.
You could screen save those and put them as a wallpaper for yourself.
Maybe. All right, well, good for her. Good for her, I see this.
Mm-hmm.
So, my main concern about this, and like I said, we'll get into, you know, more as things go on here, but the technical prowess of this episode, like, we're into the 70s, things are getting a little bit more, what have you. But still, we're getting the extreme close-ups on everyone's face at every turn. That is the hallmark of a Doctor Who anything, I guess. because, you know, you have to have, just have these extreme close-ups on everyone's face. It's so distressing and so jarring. There's many scenes where they're in, like, that radio tower thing or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Where the machinery was mic'd better than the people, and you couldn't hear what the people were saying, because there's just, like, constant whirring and buzzing of these machines, and, like, you could hear the dialogue, but, it, like, the dialogue is being broadcast at, like, a 6, and the machinery is being broadcast at a 10.
And next you're going to tell me the machinery and the you know, the sets were wobbly. Oh, my God.
Okay. And again, listen, I could forgive this. It's the 70s and so on and so forth. But the exterior shots of everything and the interior shots of everything look like completely different. Like when someone would go from being outside to coming inside or vice versa, it was jarring to how different things looked.
Sure, because outside were all shot on location, while everything inside was shot on in a sound studio.
Right.
With, and, like, cheap, you know, sets.
And the jarring cuts as well in between scenes didn't help matters either. Like, there was no transitions. It was just like, it's how I edit the show, how the show was cut together.
Wow. That is the biggest insult you have ever given Doctor Who in the history of your gentle ribbing of the show.
The green screen work in this was laughable at best.
What?
When the other Time Lord shows up to chastise the Doctor for something, like, they can't even get the background of the green screen that he's standing in front of to stay steady. That's, like, wobbling all over the place. And in only one of the 4 episodes was the boom mic visible, so I'll give them that.
The boom mic should get credit at the end of the series, because it's in it so much sometimes.
Right. And then I have to mention, you know, so the Master shows up, and there's the 2 different people that are working, like, that radio tower thing. Like, one's, like, a scientist-y guy, and the other one he hypnotizes, because that's the Master's other power, is, like, he has, through these aliens, he can control plastic, he can also hypnotize you. Like, he's just, like, super powerful, this guy. Well, and he looks like a low-rent Terrence Stamp in Superman 2.
Now stop it.
But I'm saying that in, like, the best way possible. Saying that you look like a low-rent Terrence Stamp in Superman 2 is a very high compliment.
Oh, my God. So, just one of the Master's powers is he does have the ability to hypnotize people and control their minds.
Right.
That's his. And the other thing he has is he's a master of disguise, which you'll probably get into later. But those are his things. And his catchphrase was... And it wasn't used in his first appearance. It might have been, or all the pieces were there, but it's later on is, I am the Master, and you will obey me.
No, I do not recall him saying that, and that's his catchphrase.
Yeah, oh, well, boy. That's his thing. Whenever he's hypnotizing somebody later, it's like, I am the Master, and you will obey me. And Roger Delgado as the Master is the best of the Masters, of the people who play him. He's my favorite, but sadly... He was killed in a car crash before the 3rd Doctor's run was over, because he appears in this whole season's all the episodes and then a sprinkling of them all. And then the last Doctor story was supposed to be a big battle between the 2 of them to like resolve everything. We don't really know how it was going to end. There's just rumors of the script, but he was on somewhere in maybe Egypt or Turkey, like shooting a film, and his car crashed and he died. So I'm sad. I love Roger Delgado.
He was really good. I didn't see that in my research, but I was looking to see if he did show up in previous ones, because you did say that there were other people that were going to show up again from the previous episodes. The villains are good so far. That's like always the strong point of these things.
Right.
But so where I was going with this, one of the other powers that the Master apparently has is the ability to shrink people. Because he shrinks the one guy down, and, like, they find him inside of his lunchbox.
Yes, that's the tissue compressor. That's like his sonic screwdriver. That's his weapon.
Okay. So I'll say this. One, that plot thread just doesn't get resolved. It's just like, well, this guy shrunk. I guess I'll just have to stay like that forever.
No, he's dead.
Okay, he's dead. I wasn't sure if they're going to try to fix him.
No, that when you get, because that's the whole thing, because later on he has the same weapon and he tells the doctor, like, I'm going to kill you with this.
Okay.
So.
So then I will say this, that scene where they find the guy dead in it, dead and shrunk in his lunchbox.
Mm-hmm.
Not lying, better effects than anything I've seen so far in Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh my goodness. And the hair in this is better than Legends of Tomorrow, the mustaches and...
Well, that's why I was questioning if the Brigadier had a fake mustache or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's his own actual facial hair, we can't judge the two. But if it was a fake mustache, it is a better fake mustache than any of the wigs we've seen in Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, then we later get more of his plan with how he's going to use plastic to take over the world. You have the daffodils that everyone is going to just take from those nightmare fuel creatures, but we'll get to those shortly. The absolute best scene, or at the very least top three scenes in any of the Doctor Who stuff that I've seen so far, is the self-inflating furniture scene. Oh my God.
It's better than the phone?
Okay, that's what I was going to say. Initially, the self-inflating furniture was number one, but then I forgot about the phone. The phone is number one just because of the doctor's facial expressions while it's happening, but I just enjoyed how prolonged the self-inflating furniture scene lasted.
It is. That's you can tell they were like, look at this, new inflating furniture. Let's work it into the show.
Right. So it was also at this point where I noticed that every time the Master used his hypno effect, there was special funky hypno music that they played for it as well.
Which they used whenever they said the Master's name, too.
Okay.
Because it would be like, who's working for your husband? I don't know. It's some guy called Colonel Masters. Ooh.
Right. So it was by the second episode, I'm like, okay, they're hitting that. Like, that's his... It may not be his catchphrase, but, like, that's his, like, call music.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he uses his gimmick or they say his name or whatever it is. So they're trying to find him. They come back to the circus, which I forgot to mention earlier. When they're doing the establishing shots of the circus, they mm-hmm. just show a bunch of, like, docile lions in a cage, like, not doing anything. But they yes. have to edit in lion noises.
He uproars, and nobody has a lion mouth open.
Right, and that's how the episode starts. Like, that's the first thing that we see. And I'm just like, all right, this sets the tone for this.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back to the, and they're like, I forget the guy who runs the circus, who's assisting the Master.
Mm-hmm.
But he has his, I guess the strong man from the circus, Tony.
Right.
Watch over Doctor Who. Now, this quite possibly could have been the most racially insensitive thing that I've seen in history. Being that it was a giant black man who was dressed in, like, a caveman outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't speak, and he was just, like, kind of, like, you know, I don't want to say treated like a slave, but there you go, I just did. It was offensive. Like, it did not seem to be very PC, even for 1970 whatever.
You should have seen when that guy was in a previous episode with the second Doctor, and he was like a supposedly like a mute who could barely talk, and he was just like an Aaron guy. Like, it's even worse than this, and it was the same actor. It's fantastic. And now I'm debating if you're saying that's racially insensitive. I think I know the fourth Doctor episode I'm going with. But anyway, go ahead.
So we're on to episode 3, and this is like kind of the reveal of the Autons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to point out to you, there's, I guess, and it's unclear, like, is he the leader of the Autons, like, the guy that just has the blank face?
No, he's just a random Auton that, without them, they're just, you know, plastic faceless creatures.
Okay, so, you have that one, and then you have the army, and I'm going to say army, like, we're talking about, like, 6 to 10, of the ones of those nightmare fuel things with the giant heads and the straw hats. That are mm-hmm. handing out the daffodils.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it would be more expensive to produce that effect than a guy with just a blank face.
Right, but they were just carnival headdresses that they use at people use at local like parades and carnivals. Like there's a scene later where somebody's actually one of the Autons is actually putting it on.
But what I'm saying is, I am a fan of Peter Jackson, the earlier work, you know, the horror movie stuff that he did. Mm-hmm. One of the very first movie he did was this movie called Bad Taste.
I've heard of it.
Okay. And at no point are there ever more than two of the aliens on screen at any one given time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they only had enough budget to make two of the masks.
Right.
Whereas I'm just saying that, to me, if you're looking at budget constraints, what would cost more money? Like, not in this world of Doctor Who, but from a production side, make 10 of those giant masks, or make 10 guys who just have blank faces?
Who knows? Maybe they were just laying around at the carnival that they were at.
Okay, so maybe they were. However, if that thing came up to me and handed me a plastic daffodil, I'm not taking it. So already his plan is flawed to begin with.
Have you ever been near the free section at the comic shop?
Touche.
Just stay free and people will I need all of these.
Again, until Dave puts up a little box of giving away plastic daffodils.
I'm going to put the head on and give away plastic daffodils in front of the store.
Right, but even further still. So let's say that this is, you know, this is the plan, right? Mm-hmm. So we haven't even talked about, like, the weird, like distressing, vaguely racist doll that he gives to the guy that comes to life in, you know, right? An approximation of, like, a 70s special effect of it coming to life, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he... That thing is activated by heat. The daffodils are affected by shortwave radio signals. Like, some things are affected. Sometimes the plastic does it by this, and sometimes it does it by this. It's like kind of like whatever fits the need for the story to move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So his overall plan is, he says, it's like some crazy number. It's like 450,000 of these plastic daffodils. He's going to hand them out to people. And when people use shortwave radios around them and then get real close to them, it's going to shoot a plastic film over their face that will suffocate them. This is not a horribly constructed plan.
No, it's not so much that as it's not that people have to use the shortwave radios. He was going to use the tower and the dish to set them all off. But people were accidentally setting them off by using walkie-talkies or transistors, like occasionally here and there. And that's what clued Unit in. But he was going to set them all off at once with the big transmitter and then use the transmitter to bring the Nestine from their planet.
Right. But even still, like, okay, so even if they're going to do it with the big giant radio wave thing from the satellite mm-hmm. dish, then you have to make sure that the people go over and then... Is it like a timer that, like, once a human face is so close to it, that's when the thing is going to... It's a poorly laid out plan, is what I'm saying.
It's a brilliant plan. People like to smell flowers even if they're plastic.
Okay. So, as I'd mentioned earlier as well, the doctor gets a phone call from the master on the phone who, like, blows, like, a little whistle thing into the phone.
Yeah. Because now the phone is activated by sound.
Right. And then the phone has plastic in it. Which mm-hmm. causes the cord from the phone to start wrapping around the doctor in one of the most ridiculous things you'll ever see in your entire life.
Greatest thing, I think you meant to say.
Like, I say this in, like, the... Listen, I like bad movies and, like, when you're doing things in a budget and you're trying to be very creative instead of just being very lazy. They were very creative with what they had available here because as we get into, like, here's this episode 3... Going into episode 4, I have to give them credit. The stunt work in this is really good.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is impressive.
Like, it's super impressive. Like, the one Auton that, like, rolls down a hill. Like, I've seen much bigger budget movies that just have a crudely constructed dummy and throw it down there and hope for the best.
Or an actor just stumble and slide on his stomach down the hill.
Right, or cut to stock footage or something like that. And then when the Autons have their finger guns that they're shooting at people that are causing the explosions, like, people are going flying. Like, these are, like, really good. I was super impressed by the special effects. And then I think there's, like, another Auton that gets hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that was a dude getting hit by a car and him taking a bump off that. It was very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's all that. The Doctor foils the plan. The Master's still stuck around, of course, because he can't leave because the Doctor has his piece of the TARDIS. I don't know what he called it. He called it a name or something.
Right.
I don't care.
I forget. Right. It's technobabble.
Right. So, I don't think I'm missing anything. I think I've covered it as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
With this, there's a bunch of the scenes, as you mentioned, that the Master is a master of disguise as well. And I can't remember his name, but when the dude comes out, they're like, oh, it's the Master. And he just comes out and he's like walking all weird. And I'm like, oh, that's not the Master.
What? You did? Oh, I was fooled the first time I saw it.
Right. And they did a good job in the reveals of them pulling the masks off the guys.
Right.
Like, those were the times where the extreme close-ups worked.
What? I think the extreme close-ups work all the time.
Okay. And I will say this, from the extreme close-ups here, nobody looked like super oily. Which is a problem of things shot in the 70s. Everyone just looked like greasy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like when you get like the hot close-ups of people, it's like, oh, you're so it's gross. But I think that was more so doing with so many productions being in California, California normally being hot. This more than likely was filmed in England, so, or on like a nice cushy soundstage. So they were able to control the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I thought this was good.
Mm-hmm.
It did, the whole time though, I couldn't get out of my head. It was so funny too, because I watched it over the course of a couple days, of course. I couldn't sit down and watch all four episodes back to back to back. I'd kill myself. It had to be
How
done
drunk
in,
were you?
It had to be done in pieces.
How drunk were you?
No, and I made a specific point not to get drunk while I was watching them either. Because mm-hmm. the fiasco from last time.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that in mind, because these looked so 70s, I felt as though I was watching, like, Mystery Science Theater.
Okay.
You know, because there's so many movies that they have done that are from the 70s that look almost, like, shot the same exact way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you took frames of this out of context and put it against one of the classic Mystery Science Theater films from the sci-fi era, the incredibly strange creatures who stopped the incredibly strange mixed up creatures or no I'm sorry the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed up zombies, if you took scenes from that and matched them up to this, you would not be able to tell the two movies apart, the two things apart, because they look exactly the same. Like, the way they were shot, the way the lighting was, the way that everything looked so 70s. So, like, I had that sort of mindset in my mind. And then they had announced that, I guess, Riff Trax is doing some sort of, like, Doctor Who thing.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up as, like, one of their Fathom events.
Right. The Fifth Doctor, the Five Doctors, where they have all the, you know, it's a classic team-up episode.
I say they should do these four. I think they would have more fun with this than they would with that.
Gotcha.
But overall, no, like, there's nothing that you've made me watch that I actively hate. It's all been enjoyable on its own levels.
We'll get there. but I want to throw, is that everything that you have
there?
Yeah,
I think that's all. Like, I just have a lot of times written down, like, you know, sound issues, editing issues. Like, the editing was probably the worst thing in this, because there were no scene transitions. Like, you would have the cuts, like, when you're in a scene and there's two or three people in a scene, like, the cuts are okay there, but it's the same cuts when you cut from one scene to another. And it's not supposed mm-hmm. to be, it's supposed to be, like, a fade or a dissolve or some sort of, like, different type of cut.
A wipe.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the same cut for everything. Whether you're going from person to person in the same scene, you were going scene to scene, you were going from indoor to outdoor, and that, I think, was more anything. It's a lot of the technical aspects didn't make me enjoy it any less, but those are the things that stuck out the most to me.
Gotcha. Because I just want to say just one or two things about the Third Doctor. Right. I'm going to drop some bombs here for people who you know me and my different Doctor loves. He's not my favorite Doctor. Four will always be my favorite Doctor, but the Third Doctor run is my favorite run of the classic eras.
Okay.
because he's stuck on Earth, and I like the 70s look because there's not space stations. They're shot like at oil refineries, and so it looks more real to me than the effects, like everything in a studio of the first two Doctors and in space stuff. He's like he's there. And now when it comes to outfits, the Doctor's scarf of four is the best, you know, accessory that the Doctor has ever worn. But man, that third Doctor is dapper in those felt jackets with the frill shirts. Oh my God. The third Doctor costume is my favorite costume. I think it's amazing. Oh, just different colors. Oh, I can't get enough of it. So yeah. So the third Doctor is some of the most fun I've ever had watching classic Doctor Who.
Again, it's fun because of how cheesy it is and how 70s it is.
Well, that's the whole love of it. I don't love it because it's, you know, taut drama. You know?
Right.
And there is still some good dialogue in there. I'm surprised you didn't bring up possibly my favorite Doctor insult of all time, you ham-fisted bun vendor.
That one might have been when they were having the discussions where the machines might have been too loud. I might have missed that one.
That was early when she came in and broke the experiment that he was doing when we first see Joe Grant. And he literally, and you know, the nice Doctor that he is, calls her a ham-fisted bun vendor.
You're welcome. Bun vendor.
Yeah. I guess it's a British thing. You can. There's always someone you can ask about that.
No, I'm okay.
You're okay?
Yeah. So. I'll somehow live, without caring what a bun vendor is.
I think it's a guy who vends buns.
And there's ham on those buns. I don't know what's going on.
Yep. So should we talk some wrestling now?
The World Championship Wrestling event from May of 1992, Wrestle War, featuring War Games, The Match Beyond, and other stuff.
That's right, or as I call it, a.k.a. the mullet era of wrestling.
Right, a good time for wrestling, yes.
There, that is. So the first thing I notice about Wrestle War 92 is tuxedos on the announcers.
Right.
Where has this gone?
Classy.
You would not see neck tattoo with a tuxedo. He's all like shark suit with, you know, this and that.
Right.
No, tuxedos on announcers and stuff like that. We need that. Now, Jesse gets a pass. Jesse gets a pass because Jesse is wearing this lovely leather Persian rug jacket thing.
Right.
I'm not sure what it is. But on top of that, he's bald with a ponytail, maybe? It's hard to see sometimes.
It's a skullet.
A skull? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. It's like, you know, he's got like the horseshoe of hair,
mm-hmm.
but he's letting it grow long. That's what's commonly referred to in hairstyle vernacular as a skullet.
You'd think with my long flowing mane, I would know more hair terms, but right. I don't. But I found that really amusing. And then he's picking on, well, he's not picking on, but he's talking about JR's polka dotted tie, but he's pointing at the handkerchief in his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, it's really early on that I'm not really sure about Jesse's announcing.
Okay.
Because he's sometimes the best announcer I've ever seen, and sometimes the worst. Like, he'll say logical things, like there's a masked like wrestler, and he's like, I never understood why wrestlers wear masks, because it seems constricting, and you wouldn't be able to see. And JR is like, just like, great, now I have to say something to make it why a wrestler would wear a mask. Some would say, Jesse, that it's to hide your facial expression so you don't know they're in pain and stuff like that. And I just feel throughout this Wrestle War, JR's just like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to acknowledge what he is saying at times. And then there's just sometimes where he's like, I'm not even going to answer. Like, at one point, with the masks, he's talking about, like, yeah, and the wrestlers with masks. Now, a few times in my day, there were a few women who needed to wear masks, if you know what I mean, during certain times, old JR. And JR just like, that was a heck of an abdominal stretch out there, Jesse. You're like, what?
Jesse was real big on not preparing.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't show.
Just kind of winging it and hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's absolutely brilliant what he says, because I agree with it. And he's calling out stuff that's like, well, why if all you want is the win, why would you throw a man back in the ring to stop the count? Just get in yourself. A win's a win. And I'm like, yeah, that's not an exciting win, but it's a win.
Right.
Why don't you do it? And JR is just like, well, it's the spirit of the, you know, the fight. And you're like, JR's just like, just stop killing me. Just stop killing me, Jesse. And it was funny, because like, I was like, logical and stupid at the same time. And Jesse, early on, talking about Wrestle War, about how in the 60s he was in Vietnam or the war or whatever, but at no point does he mention he fought a predator. That's what I was upset about. I was like, all right, we lost the war in Nam, and he lost the war with the fight with the Predator, so I don't see why he would mention one and not the other. But I was like, no Predator mention. I looked. I was like, it's 92. Predator was already out. I don't know. I was really upset about it.
All right. Well, so, yeah, I think, you know, with his movies, Jesse was probably getting ready. If not, was he – because he was in Running Man. I'm just trying to think what other Arnold movies he would have been around this time.
Oh, I forgot about Running Man.
Yeah. But he's like, so that, Mr. America or whatever it was.
Oh, yes. I need to watch that again.
It's a great film.
So that happens, and then you tell me to watch the intro of the next match.
You're supposed to pretend like you watched the whole thing, but okay.
I don't care. There's no kayfabe here.
All right, so on that condition, I'm glad that there's other stuff in the middle of the card that I didn't tell you to skip, that you had to watch the whole thing, but go ahead.
So, the Fabulous Freebirds, is that who they are?
Right.
They come out in apparently the Eddie Murphy Delirious jackets. Is that what they are?
They're rock and rollers, Todd.
No, they are in the Eddie Murphy Delirious jackets. And they come out, and I don't know what song is playing, but I could, because that's another thing. Like, you're talking about the audio. Sometimes the audio of the music that is going on, I have no idea. And at this point, I get the effects budget for the pyrotechnics, mm-hmm. and it's fantastic. Somebody just got a bunch of those, like, sparkle shooters.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's all we need. And at this point, I notice there's a ramp to the ring.
Yes.
And I'm like, is this the one? Is someone going to win? I'm like, is this? Because that's what
no,
I remember.
No, yeah.
Right. So at this whole thing I'm waiting for, I'm going to win. And it never came. So I was sad about that.
All right.
So basically, that's all I remember. The Freebirds win. So
right. I don't know. I also wanted to see, because, you know, as you say, the Freebirds, this is the second time they'll have shown up. The blonde-haired one. And I think they show up later in a promo as well.
We'll get to that, yes.
Okay, so we'll get to that. But the blonde-haired one is Michael P.S. Hayes, who is the doot-doot-doot guy.
Ah, Michael P.S.A., yes.
Right. And then the people that they wrestled, Greg the Hammer Valentine and the tailor-made man.
Oh, yes, the Hugh Hefner guy.
Okay. That is the Stooge Rooster, Terry Taylor.
Is it really?
Yes.
See, I didn't know. I just knew it was Hugh Hefner and the other guy. So, because he had the smoking jacket on.
Right. Prior to this, he was, no, right around this time, he would transition from being the tailor-made man to being Terrence Taylor, the computerized man of the 90s.
Oh, my goodness. Some of the gimmicks on here are fantastic.
Which is why there are certain shows that you had to watch because of these reasons.
Okay, so now the next match, out comes the flamboyant Saint of Killers.
Okay.
like his golden jacket and the pistols on his butt on the thing. He's a young Pistol Tracy.
Young Pistol Tracy Smothers.
So at this point, I'm like, I have a feeling, you know, I'm like, my God, look at this guy in his gold, you know, cowboy outfit. Look at this. This is going to be the most flamboyant, over the top thing I'm going to see in this whole show.
Right.
There's nothing that can top this. Nothing's going to get better than this. Are you sitting down, Joe?
Yes.
Out comes Johnny B. Badd.
Right.
And I am immediately all in on Johnny B. Badd. Mm-hmm. He comes out in a Hawkman outfit with his wings shooting flaming balls into the air. I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. He's spinning around. It's got Johnny B. Badd for president on the back. And I'm like, not the worst wrestling thing that we could get for president. I know he's outrageous because he keeps telling me as he's coming to the ring how outrageous he is. It's fantastic. He has kiss stickers that he gives women.
The kiss that don't miss, right?
Kiss that don't miss. Now, you're a fan of stickers. Do you have any of these?
I wish. Know?
Oh, my God. If I can find John B. Badd kiss that don't miss stickers, they are all yours.
All right. Thank you.
Now, women are stuffing money in his knee pads.
Okay.
And I'm like, does he get to keep that? Like,
yeah, sure.
Because I'm like, that's a great gimmick. That you come out and people give you money.
Right.
That's like extra in your pocket. That's like gas money in 92 for wrestlers. Then he has a glitter stick staff that shoots big wads of glitter.
The Bad Blaster.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, and at this point, Jesse starts going on his cheating jag, which is a constant theme through the rest of the show. He's talking about how Johnny B. Badd was a Golden Glover or something like that.
He was a legitimate Golden Gloves boxer, yes.
Mm-hmm. And he had the what was the move? The
kiss that don't miss.
The kiss that don't miss. That's his punch. And Jesse's like, it's a closed fist. And
right.
That should be illegal. If he wants to put on gloves. And this is where Jesse's being logical. And... Because isn't a closed fist illegal?
And yes, technically yes.
Technically yes. Now JR has to just shut that down. And he's like, well, you know, and he doesn't even have an answer. He doesn't have a legitimate answer. And Jesse just will not let it go.
Uh-huh.
And I legitimately feel sorry for JR again. This is another Jesse moment. As you've pulled back the curtain that he doesn't prepare.
Right.
So I find that completely interesting. And so, oh, by the way, what?
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish this, and then I have a couple notes on Johnny B. Badd.
Oh, by the way, Johnny B. Badd wins with an illegal punch.
Right.
So
Johnny B. Badd originally came into World Championship Wrestling as a dastardly heel.
What?
He would say things to the camera that he's so pretty he should have been born a little girl. not trying to incite any sort of mentality of certain people that would watch professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So then he turns babyface. He would later do an angle where he had to wear a mask because another villain stole his Bad Blaster and shot him in the face with it.
Oh my goodness.
And he didn't want anyone to see how horribly it scarred his face.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of some other good Johnny B. Badd stuff. The kiss that don't miss stuff. They really start playing fast and loose with, like, you know, him being like, I think if you hear his music, I don't know if it's included in the version that you watched, but this was a time where a lot of the wrestlers in World Championship Wrestling, their music would tell you the story of who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line in Johnny B. Badd's theme song where it says he's as pretty as a picture and he looks like Little Richard.
No point did I get any of that.
Okay. Oh,
yeah, he looks exactly like Rich Little coming out there.
Rich Little. Also, yes. I don't want to blow your mind. He's not really a black guy.
What?
He's actually, like, a Jewish guy from Brooklyn.
That's not true.
All right.
Okay. Okay.
He just has a nice tan.
So, yes. So, at this point, we cut to a promo with Miss Hyatt.
Missy Hyatt.
Missy Hyatt and the Fabulous Freebirds and some woman who's with them who, at this point during the whole promo, they don't mention her name.
Right.
They don't. I have no idea who this person is standing there. So I'm like, okay, I think they mention her name later on, but this goes on. Now, the Fabulous Freebirds, they mention a Leonard Skinner thing, and I finally put it all together. Freebird, Skinner, rock and roll. I'm like, okay, I got this. Then they start talking about Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
And which is funny because Jesse goes off during the next match.
Yep.
During the like, which we'll get to. So while this is all going on, Michael PSA is maybe he's on a little bit of promo powder, and I'm like, all right, here we go. This is the first of, you know, my coke fueled promos, and the other guy not so much. And I'm like, all right, this is like a lesser one. They're saving it for the big guys later. And I'm just going to say I was a little sad as it went on because apparently coke-fueled promos or promos themselves were illegal during Wrestle War 92 because this is the first and the last promo throughout the rest of the show. Well, aww. It's not a promo, but he wins. So that kind of made me sad. I was like, where's all the crazy wrestlers? So they cut back to Eric Bischoff, and they finally mention who that was. Precious, maybe?
Yes. Jimmy Garvin's wife.
Is Jimmy Garvin the other one?
Yes. From?
Okay. At this point, he does mention that she's with him, and Eric Bischoff mentions in the politically correct 90s that behind every man there's a successful woman, and I'm like, yeah, thank God, you know, it was only the 90s that were like that. We don't see that ever again in our climate.
Right.
Made me laugh. But so then we go to the next match, which is Marcus Bagwell.
Yes.
Versus Scotty Flamingo. And as I'm watching this, Jesse and JR start arguing about who's sexier and hotter.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. This is amazing. This is before we get off the whole Southern Rock and Stairway to Heaven. And I'm like, this match is announcing is a train wreck. And I'm like, Marcus Bagwell, he should have a better name, like Studley Bagwell or something like that, because he was so hot. And then Scotty Flamingo, he's perfect. Best gimmick ever. So happy and upbeat. He's got a bird name that's better than any other bird name that you can have as a wrestler. I mean, you can't top Scotty Flamingo as a bird name for a wrestler.
Right.
I wouldn't even try, Joe. I wouldn't even try. I don't know what he went on to do, but what about him? What about Scotty Flamingo? That's all I have to say.
Oh, boy. As a fan, it's jarring for me to go back and watch Raven here as Scotty Flamingo.
But it's fantastic.
Yes. It's fantastic, yes, but it's still jarring because... You know.
Oh, sorry. So he comes out, and I'm like, is that? It took me a while. I mean, I'm not the wrestling fan that you are, Joe.
Sure.
But I'm like, that's Raven. Oh, my God. Like, I don't even know. I don't even know. And then while all this is going on, okay, we've gone through who's hotter, Bagwell or Flamingo. And then they're arguing about whether it's Southern Rock or Redneck Rock for 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then at some point, they start talking about the war for some reason.
Well, right. So what happened was Jesse talks about how he likes both these guys. Mm-hmm. And he says that they're his like, he feels as though they're his contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
That he would be friends with these two guys. And JR says, oh, you're old enough to be their dad. And he goes, maybe like their dad's younger friend. And he goes, you just talked about serving a nun before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's how the war stuff came up.
All right. I forget. And then at this point, JR starts bagging on him. And he's like, well, you never served, JR. I think you're a draft. Like, he calls him a draft dodger.
Yeah.
I'm like, JR, I don't think JR should have been fighting in Vietnam, but that's a whole nother story. I don't know. I think, you know, Jesse's killing me at this point.
Doesn't JR say that he was 6 during Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's something like that. Oh, my God. And by the way, Flamingo wins.
Right.
And then we get a commercial for Beach Blast.
Yes.
Which I just want to watch for the tagline. It's going to be totally beachin'. I was like, sold on Beach Blast. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going on. But when you have great taglines, that like that, I'm fine. Was Beach Blast a great pay-per-view, Joe?
It was a very good show. Highlighted by a Sting versus Cactus Jack Falls Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast match.
Oh my God.
And a bikini contest where it was co-hosted by Jesse Ventura and Johnny B. Bad, who was in a sailor's outfit of his wrestling gear that you saw him wear tonight.
Oh my goodness. I think it's at this point that Jesse starts mentioning about Beach Blast and measurements.
Right, because he's the host of the bikini contest.
Right, is that what it was? Because I was going to ask you, because that's a thing through it all, and measuring chests, and I'm like, oh my God. And JR's got to play it up like, are you going to give us that information, body? And he's like, no, I don't feel like it right now. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't know.
Juxtaposing Jesse's remarks like that with Bischoff earlier, he's like, we find every successful man is a successful woman. And Jesse's like, let's whip him out and measure him.
That's right. Politically correct 90s.
Yep.
So the next match is Mr. Hughes, who's just in a suit.
Right.
He's a bodyguard, I guess.
Yes.
Who's naturally teamed up with Cactus Jack because they seem like they'd be best buds.
Right.
And then it's Junkyard Dog versus Junkyard Dog and Ron Simmons.
Right.
Who Ron Simmons looks eerily familiar to me. Could he be Farouk?
He is Farouk, yes.
That's what I thought. I was waiting for him to say, damn, like he used to say when he was in the APA.
Right.
I was like, I wanted that. So now I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen Junkyard Dog wrestle in years. I can't wait for him to get into this match and show me his stuff. He gets, what?
Go ahead. I was just laughing.
He gets attacked by Cactus Jack, who is unpredictable, thanks to the announcing, the great announcing they let me know, because he had wandered off during his entrance. And he throws him into the thing, and he gets his ribs hurt. He's obviously hurt. He's the most hurt I've ever seen a wrestler. So I knew we probably weren't going to see him. But then Ron Simmons, a.k.a. Farouk, decides to take on both of them or one of them. I don't know. It's very ambiguous for the first 5 minutes of the match.
Correct.
Is it a tag team? Is it a handicap? Is it a one-on-one? Is it what's going on? And Jesse's asking JR questions. JR's like, I don't know. Ask the ref. And I'm like, somebody get on this. Somebody talk into the earpiece and figure out what's going on. I like that Mr. Hughes actually wrestles in his suit and sunglasses.
Yes.
You don't see that every day. And Cactus Jack, it was doing his excellent crazy to the camera when anything was going on. I was like, he was squealing and saying things that I didn't really understand. And once again, this is where Jesse the Body is screaming, everything is illegal. Everything that's going on is illegal. And I don't know. I actually forget. I didn't write down who won this match.
Ron Simmons won.
Ron Simmons. Oh, and he beat all odds against, you know.
Right. This was the beginning of kind of a big push for Ron Simmons. He had just recently turned babyface. Mr. Hughes would later turn babyface after either Ron Simmons or Junkyard Dog headbutt him and his sunglasses break. And that causes him to see the error of his ways. And then he rebrands himself as the Big Cat Curtis Hughes.
Mm. Okay.
Yep.
So now, the next match is Super Invader?
Yes.
Which is a great name, which is not generic in any way at all. And then he's fighting Todd Champion.
Right, a nobody.
A patriotic seaman from the WCCW Special Forces, apparently.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead. So, Todd Champion from WCW Special Forces, his tag team partner, Firebreaker Chip.
Wait, what?
His tag team, they were a tag team, Todd Champion and Firebreaker Chip, who was like a little like short Mexican guy who was also a fireman.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. And he's fighting Super Invader. Is he any relation to Big Van Vader?
Well, this is rumor and innuendo, but at the time when, because Vader was under contract, Big Van Vader was under contract with WCW, but he was like in and out due to Japan stuff. And I mm-hmm. think they just had a guy in kind of with a similar sounding name in the hopes to cause brand confusion.
Okay.
But that's purely speculation on my part.
Okay. Because it was just one of those things. And Super Invader has a weird mitten on, which nobody ever explains.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, oh, look at that. Look at that weird mitten Super Invader's wearing. And then, like, he grabs somebody by the face. But it's not like anything comes of it. So my attention is squarely drawn to the weird mitten. But it's never, I don't know if that, like, plays out later or after the pay-per-view that it's got special powers or something like that. No?
He was supposed to be Oriental, I think.
Well, yeah, I think it was because he had, like, a Japanese, like, flag print right. on his mask or something.
Right.
I just figured it was, I don't know. They brought a lot of attention to it, and then it was just never mentioned again. And there was a gentleman who came out with Big Van Vader named Harley Race.
Yes.
And I think he might be a 7-time champ.
Oh, did they mention it once or twice?
Because Jesse mentioned it a lot. He's like, I know for a fact Harley Race is a man of integrity and he won't interfere in this match because, you know, a 7-time champ wouldn't do that, JR. And he's like, you don't know that, Jesse. And he's like, well, a 7-time champ. And I'm like, I think Harley Race is a 7-time champ, but I'm not 100% sure. Joe would know better.
Harley Race, also one of the legitimate tough guys in the world of professional wrestling.
Guy you didn't want to mess with in a bar or something like that?
Right, that sort of thing.
And he was the guy who sent messages to lazy and stupid wrestlers in the ring?
Yeah.
Okay, good. But this was a very boring match for me after a while.
Yeah, I should have told you to skip this one. My apologies.
I might have. Oh, and at one point, Jesse, for I don't know why or where, brings in a timely Gregory Peck reference. Somebody looks like Gregory Peck, and I'm like, this is 1992. I'm like, let's drop some My Three Sons references in there, too, while we're at it.
Oh, my goodness.
So that happens. We get more beach blast measurement hints that nothing ever comes of during the show. And then the next match is Richard Morton, who I think his gimmick is he's Rod Stewart, fights some guy. Well, Richard Morton in his Doug Henning costume fights some guy named Big Josh, which yes. is another great gimmick, not generic in any way, shape, or form. We get another maybe 20-minute match of Jesse saying how smelly Big Josh is and his clothes are old and rotting. Big Josh has a move called the log roll.
Right.
Where he stands on somebody's chest and does a very manly tap dance on them. And the best part about this match is Big Josh yells timber before he does his finishing move. There's nothing better than a lumberjack actually yelling timber before, knocking out his opponent. Which was fantastic. Another boring match. I don't know if you can tell because I don't have much.
Right.
Much here.
So I'll just say this. Richard Morton was the former Ricky Morton, one half of the Rock and Roll Express.
Mm-hmm.
He turned heel by changing absolutely nothing about his appearance or his in-ring style, other than just changing his name from Ricky to Richard.
Oh, Richard. Oh, that accursed Richard.
Yes. Big Josh would later go on to see more notorious fame as Doink the Clown.
Really? That's Doink?
Yes, indeed.
Wasn't there millions of Doinks, though?
He was, like, the original, like, evil Doink.
Is he still alive?
Well, that was going to be something I was going to save until the end of the show on having you guess the number of dead people on the show. But go ahead.
Oh, okay, we'll save it. I
should have been doing this as we've been going along.
Right.
But actually, the previous match, Super Invader, was previous do you remember, this might have been before your time of WWF, Hercules, the Mighty Hercules?
No, I don't remember him. Okay.
So, Hercules was the Super Invader. He is sadly passed. Big Josh also sadly passed.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it so far into the show. We're pretty deep into the show. We're, you know, six matches in and only two dead people.
Right. The
Which,
next
if we did that with the Royal Rumble from the last time that you watched it, oh boy.
There's a Grim Reaper count there.
And it's not just because the Undertaker's in the match neither.
Oh boy. So, the next match is Flying Brian.
Yes.
Versus the Z-Man.
Correct.
Do you know what my notes under Flying Brian and Z-Man are? There are two things.
All right.
Most of the match, JR and Jesse insult each other about their college football teams.
Right.
And Z-Man at one point kicks Flying Brian's head off after he jumps off the rope. That was like just a move that I noticed. It's like, oh, like I'm going to jump off the rope and hit. Let me see. Let me look at. I'm going to hit Z-Man with an elbow or whatever off the rope. And it actually looked like Z-Man kicked Brian right in the face and killed him. But that's like the only thing that I got from that match.
Right. I kind of felt that one would not be your speed. The match that was like a kind of a, you know, baby face, feeling out process, and we all become friends at the end anyway.
Right, and at this point, Jesse again is like, which one of these good guys is going to be the first to cheat? You know it's going to happen. He just, like, just running thing. He wants to see someone cheat in the worst way, except for Harley Race, because he's a seven-time champion and wouldn't.
Right.
So, then the next match is...
Brian Pillman is dead.
Brian Pillman is dead? I'm sorry. I hope, you know, whatever. So the next match is two people that I'm not even going to attempt to say their names.
Tatsumi Fujinami
and
Kayuza Iizuka. That one's a little tough for me.
Right. Versus Earmuffs and the Batman Rider. They're back again.
Right.
Big Papa Pump, you know, one of my favorites. He doesn't say much. This actually, you know, like all seriousness, is a brutal match.
Yes.
I don't know if those Steiners, they like to throw people around. One of the Japanese guys?
Yes.
I want to make sure that I get the right, you know, country. Gets squashed at one point and his face just looks horrible, but I give him credit. He gets in that ring and he does this bunch of stuff, even though his eyes is swollen shut. He's bleeding out of an eye. He's got blood pouring out of his nose. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you. I thought that was a great thing. At this point, I also noticed why they don't wrestle in the first ring on the ramp. This is where I started to notice that everybody comes in, walks down the ramp, walks down the steps, pass the first ring and go to wrestle in the second ring, which maybe was for cameras or something like that. I have no idea. But also Jesse and JR made this about car companies because the Steiners are from Detroit, Michigan, maybe?
Right.
And the Japanese guys were wearing Mitsubishi and Toyota and all these other car companies, and it really became about car companies. I found that completely amusing. Great, great announcing once again. But I really enjoyed this match, and I really don't know how to go in depth about it. But just two bruisers on the Steiners.
There was a show from about a year prior where the Steiners took out another Japanese team. Two guys that would go on to, you know, these two guys went on to Fujinami, you know, was a big star at the time. Izuka, you know, was a big star, not a huge star. Year earlier, they had a match against two guys, Hiroshi Hase and Kensuke Sasaki. Kensuke Sasaki was very new in the world of professional wrestling at this time. Mm-hmm. And for the 15-minute match, the Steiners just beat the ever-loving shit out of him.
Oh, boy.
It was kind of their MO. When they were, they would later, oh, let me think what the timeline is. They would later in the year go to the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a thing where when they would do like squash matches, none of the normal job guys would want to wrestle the Steiners because they were so brutal. So they would just have like whatever, like one or two guys would decide to wrestle the Steiners. Okay, if we need to tape three matches with the Steiners tonight, you need to put on three different masks and three different sets of gear.
Oh, boy.
Right. Because, you know, they would say, like, during this time in WCW, you know, when they would do the TV tapings, and they would do things like this, they would tape, like, three or four matches in a day that would be shown over the course of a month. The job guys would come in, and they would see that their names were against the Steiners and just leave.
Not worth the paycheck.
Nope, not worth the paycheck. And WCW at that, actually at this time, had a lot of money to burn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were paying job guys like $300 a shot in 1992 money.
Wow, I don't even make that now.
Right.
At the Cinnabon.
Right, and they would show up and be just like, nope, not worth it.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I enjoyed that one. And then we get to the big event.
The main event, sure.
The main event.
The big event.
The big event with the Sting Squadron. I wish they put Supreme on the end of that. And then the Dangerous Alliance, Pauly Dangerously again, who I know is as they call him the Chief Executive Officer. I don't like that name for him. I like the Advocate. That's a better name. So I'm watching this going, nope, he's not the Chief Executive Officer. But I know it'll eventually get better. And then there's a lot of people on each team that I'm looking at that I recognize. There's Sting before he becomes Kabuki Sting.
Right.
Barry Windham, I don't know him too well. Dustin Rhodes, is he any relation to Stardust and Goldust?
That is Goldust.
No.
Yes.
No.
2 years later, he would become Goldust.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
In WCW?
WWF.
He'd go over? He'd be a turncoat?
Well, he 2 years later. Now, see, okay, so let me think. It's about 2.5, 3 years later, he has a match on a WCW pay-per-view called Uncensored, where he takes on a gentleman by the name of the Blacktop Bully, who you would know better as the Repo Man.
Oh, boy.
The Blacktop Bully, his gimmick was he wore a trucker hat and blew an air horn.
Oh, my goodness.
So these two have a match called the King of the Road match,
mm-hmm.
where they're fighting on the back of a flatbed truck.
Mm-hmm.
And the object is to incapacitate your opponent, climb to the front of the trailer, the part closest to the cab, and ring a bell.
Right.
Now, this was actually being filmed on a moving truck.
Right.
And it was filmed over the course of a day to get the correct shots. So it's constantly going from nighttime to daytime, daytime to nighttime. There's a lot of editing. You think there was editing issues in Doctor Who episodes. This was WCW 1994, so it was terrible. So during the match, both men, as they say, get color, which neither of them were authorized to do.
Mm-hmm.
After this match, the two of them and the agent for the match are all fired.
Wow.
And that is what leads Dustin Rhodes to go to the WWE and become Goldust.
And the rest is history.
The rest is, and he is one of few people on this show that are still actively wrestling today. Everyone else is either long retired or, you know, not too many dead people, but, you know.
Right. So then there's the Dangerous Dangerous Alliance.
Right.
With people that I don't recognize, like Beautiful Bobby.
Right, Bobby Eaton, sure. One of the, Bobby. You know,
stalwart of World Championship Wrestling.
Then there's Bobby Roode's uncle, Rick.
Bobby Roode's uncle, sure.
Right. And then there's a blonde gentleman who's very stunning.
Yes.
And it must be like another Steve Austin, because there's the $6 million man, then there's Stone Cold.
Yes.
And then there's stunning, because this guy's got blonde, you know, hair and everything. But he does look, was he any relation? Is he like a cousin or something to Stone Cold?
Yes. It's a distant cousin.
A distant cousin?
Yes.
Because I found that amusing. I'm like, stunning Steve Austin.
That was back when his gimmick was that of a Hollywood pretty boy.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He was announced from Hollywood, California.
So that's great. And was his finishing move still the stunner back then?
No, he would do a move called a stun gun.
Oh, okay.
Where he would, like, whip you into the ropes. And as you would come toward him, he would kind of grab you in a bear hug,
mm-hmm.
but fall backwards with you and drop your neck across the top rope.
Oh, okay.
A much safer move.
Okay. And doesn't get sold as well by The Rock as the stunner, where he flips 9 times across a ring.
And to actually bring it all circle, going to the WWE, looking for a new finishing move, it was the aforementioned Michael Hayes that gave him that move. The stunner.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Michael PSA gave him that
yes.
move.
Yes.
And then there's like some schlub, Arn Anderson, stuff like that.
How dare you?
What? I don't know. He's Arnie. I don't know. But so this is one of those matches. I like the match. I love the idea of this match.
Right.
Where it's, you know, the whole 5 minutes, and then every 2 minutes somebody goes in. There's a coin toss. So there's gambling involved. There's... You know, and then, like, each side has one side has an upper hand for a while, and then at the end, it's somebody has to give up, which
right.
I think
submit
is
a surrender.
Right, is a great thing. And I'm like, do we even see this match anymore?
No.
No? Because it makes people look weak, is that what it is?
No, because it is a wholly WCW creation, they don't want to use it.
I don't know why.
Yes.
This is, of all the things, like, I think maybe with the exception of Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
This is my favorite thing of a wrestling match. I don't know, like, stipulation, type, whatever you want to call it. Because it's chaos. It is utter chaos in it. Like, there's no way for me to go down this and just explain stuff other than one or two things that pop out. Because it's like, you know... Stunning Steve goes in, and then Wyndham goes in, and then the dragon. But one of the things is the dragon, he has a nose bandage on. Did he get
hurt?
Right,
because
he
got his nose broken, sure.
Was it legit broke, or was it?
I think, you know, like, you know, whatever.
Right, no, I didn't know, but whatever. So that's going on, and, you know, back and forth, they all end up in the ring, and at some point, Medusa, is that who
yes.
it is? Ends up climbing up the ring, and boy, did they support the roof of that ring, boy. There is no there's no droop as her and Sting are bouncing around on the top of that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm terrified. I was more terrified for Medusa and Sting on the top of the Wrestle War ring than I was for Mick on top of the
Hell in
the
Cell years later, sure.
Right. I'm like, oh my God, be careful. And then she drops Polly Dangerously's cellophone into the ring through the roof. And he, you know, and old generic Arn Anderson starts hitting people with it. And I'm not really sure what becomes of it, but I found that amusing that she had to go up into the rafters to drop the phone in.
Right.
While Polly Dangerously is yelling game plans with his big, you know, playbook and stuff. I thought that was fun. One question I do have is Nikita Koloff. Wasn't he like an evil Russian wrestler at some point? Like,
he was an evil Russian wrestler at many points, but then he became a good Russian wrestler.
Right. Was this during the Gorbachev years where we were like friends
yes.
with him? Okay. Because
yes.
I was wondering. I was like, wasn't Nikita a bad guy?
Yeah.
And I was like, you still can't trust those Ruskies. If anybody was ever going to be a Rocket Red in wrestling, it was going to be Nikita Koloff.
There you go.
Little comic knowledge in there. So this goes on. I have two notes that there's more football with JR and Jesse talking more about football than they are the match that's going on. And at one point, Jesse brings up that it's, or I forget if it's Jesse or JR brings up that it's like Guyana with Jim Jones in the ring. And I'm like, oh, there's a nice reference. There's just nice, you know, that's fantastic. Let's bring up the biggest one of the biggest maskers in human history. I'm like, just a great reference in the middle of this. Then people start taking turnbuckles apart. And as this is going on, Sting is going to get, I think was it Sting was going to get hit
right. by Larry Zbyszko.
The cracker mogul.
Larry Zbyszko, yes.
Crunchy Larry Nabisco.
Oh my goodness.
That's don't they call him Crunchy? Because, you know.
Yeah, the living legend Larry Zbyszko. He retired Bruno Sammartino, allegedly.
Allegedly?
Allegedly.
So he ends up taking a swing with the turnbuckle and hits not Sting, but his own guy.
Right. I think Bobby Eaton.
Bobby Eaton. Yeah. And he ends up submitting because I think he broke his arm or something. I don't know. Like the whole thing, and they lose the match. And then they were all, I was worried for Mr. Nabisco. He was going to get beat up by the group, but then it stops and Wrestle War ends. Everything's yes. okay.
They would later kick him out of the group and the Dangerous Alliance would fall apart some 5 months later.
Oh, that's sad. But at least Paulie went on to bigger and better things.
Right.
So.
Like suing the company for wrongful termination.
What? That yes. didn't happen.
Yes, it did.
That doesn't sound like something my Paulie would do.
So, overall, did you enjoy Wrestle War 92?
I did enjoy it. Yes. Of the three that I watched, this is my least favorite.
Okay.
But what I did like, what blew me away, especially the Johnny B. Badd stuff. I was so entertained with all that. I did like some of the matches, but at times, like, there was some dead weight in the middle of this pay-per-view.
Right.
Even when you were telling me to, like, maybe if you want to just check some stuff out, I'm like, ugh, I'm fast forward. I don't even know. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I can't take this anymore.
There is a bunch of stuff that I should have told you to skip. That's on me.
No, that's fine because I'm making you watch all of Doctor Who, like right. four episodes, five episodes here, six episodes there. But I was like, whatever. It's part of my punishment for making you watch Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was fun. I hope you were entertained by my review of it.
I was. I enjoyed it. And not to tease too much or give too much away, but the next one that you're going to be watching is going to be another WCW show with a lot of these familiar faces on it. And maybe the return of some folks that you may have seen in some other shows.
Okay.
All right.
Good to know.
So the last thing I just want to mention here is, because these always go along, is my dad's traction bit. Mm-hmm. As it were. So, I was with Asa for 4 days by myself this week. And everything went well. You know, I would say good to well, outside of a certain Stan Malibu coming over the house for dinner on Friday.
Did he have the jacket?
No, he was actually regaling me a story that there was a plan in place that he was going to bequeath the Stan Malibu gimmick to someone else to take over.
Oh, bought me?
No, not you. I wish it was you. But I got really mad at him about it, like legitimately mad.
Well, I'll talk to you on that.
All right. So the other thing was, Asa is still a little kid. He needs to take his nap. We went to go see Power Rangers on Saturday, and Power Rangers was fine. If you want to hear more about my discussion about Power Rangers, I covered when I was on Podcasty earlier this week. So we get home from the movie, and Ace is like, I'm not taking a nap. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go take a nap. Because usually, like, if me or April be like, I'm going to go take a nap, he'll be like, I'll go take a nap. He doesn't take a nap. The reason I wanted him to take a nap is because I knew he was tired. And the longer the day now goes without him taking a nap, the bigger of an asshole he's going to be.
Just like his daddy.
Right, just like his dad. So we're getting ready for bed. Like, he doesn't eat. It takes him an hour and a half to eat a slice of pizza and literally 10 peas. Right?
because he's just dragging his ass. He doesn't want to do it. So we're getting ready for the tub. Before he goes to the tub, he has to go to the bathroom, so he gets his little stool to put by the toilet. And in doing so, he kind of like squishes his fingers a little bit in between the toilet and his stool.
Mm-hmm.
And you would thought he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
The reaction that he had to this. So he wants me to get him a cup of ice water for him to put his fingers in while he's going to the bathroom and while I'm giving him his bath and everything else like that. So he just won't stop. He says, I think you're going to have to take me to the hospital.
Oh my God.
Now, whenever we're messing around and he gets hurt, I always say, I'm like, what hurts? And he'll say whatever it hurts. And I go, oh, it looks like we'll have to cut it off so it won't hurt anymore. And that usually snaps him out of it. It doesn't hurt anymore and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, you're going to have to take him to the hospital. Now, I'm not going to do the impersonation of him doing, like, his, like, crying. I'm sure you, Todd, or other people listening have heard, like, a kid, like, where they're crying, but they're also trying to talk, right?
I'm just going to say, I remember when he dropped his lollipop in Baltimore. Is it anything like that?
If dropping the lollipop in Baltimore was a 10, which it was, this was like 100.
Oh, my God.
So we'll get into it, right? So he goes, we're going to have to go to the hospital because it hurts so bad. And all I say to him is, what do you think they're going to do with your fingers at the hospital? To which he realizes, in his mind, he thinks that they're going to cut them off. Now, earlier he said that it hurts infinity. That's how much it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So once he realizes that if we go to the hospital, they're going to have to cut his fingers off.
Oh, my God.
He says, no, it doesn't hurt that bad. He says, it hurts less than 100. It hurts like 200. And I say, you know, 200 is more than 100. And if he has not lost his shit by now, he loses his shit even more. No! That's not what I meant! He's going out of his mind, right?
He thinks his father is taking him to get amputations.
Yes. And the whole time, I'm covering my face and mouth with his washcloth because I'm laughing so hard at all of this.
Right?
Okay. So, I stop him, and I say, calm down. You have 5 seconds. Stop crying. I go, do you know why you're acting like this? And he goes, because I did take a nap. And I said, that's right. So next time I say you're going to take a nap, what are you going to do? Take a nap. And then he was fine.
Oh, my God.
Now, he did need 2 Band-Aids on each finger to go to bed. And he was afraid to take the Band-Aids off because he was afraid they were going to rip his fingernails off.
That does happen.
So that was the really only kerfuffle over the 4 days that we were home alone.
Oh, no robbers trying to get in and you stopped them with everyday household products?
No.
Because you were home alone?
No, we have an alarm and locks on our doors.
Oh, goodness. I prefer a kid, you know, setting the house up like a castle for a siege. That's my, you know, home invasion stuff.
Right. So thanks everyone for bearing with us on this one. These Gallifrey birds are always going to be long. And they only come around once a month, so they're like a special treat for you.
Mm-hmm. They're a special treat for us, too.
That's right. So, just, you know, closing things out, longboxheroes.com, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will catch you all here next week.